Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Gateway Rescue Mission, meeting the physical and spiritual needs of the homeless right here in Jackson, Mississippi. Check us out at www.gatewaymission.org.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
And good morning, Mississippi. Ken Hackman, the Birdman, here with you this morning, filling in for Nellie. We're going to have a wonderful time this morning talking about gardening for the birds. I think it's about time to talk about seeds this morning. We're going to hit a lot of that up. But first, want to talk to Lance back there behind the glass in the producing studio. Good morning, Lance. What do we have for today?
Well, we got the man, you know, Ken Hackman, the Birdman. He is back. And after world travels and teaching the youngsters and calling ball games and basketball on the fly, and you got this coming, man. I'm just glad to have you. So good to see you again. It's been a while.
It has.
Your Jaguars are doing well.
They are.
They can run the ball. Got an excellent defensive line. Well coached outfit.
Looking good.
And you got the best. You got the best play by play guy in the country, I think, maybe.
You think so,
yeah,
huh?
I think so. Yeah.
He's pretty good, isn't he? Now, you're talking about Bob, right?
Well, Bob, yeah. I know you're the he is. He's our play-by-play best in the country, and you're the voice of the Jaguars, of every Jaguar sporting event.
I only do 9 sports.
Is there more?
Football, basketball, soccer, baseball. Volleyball and
volleyball has really taken off in Mississippi.
It has.
Our listeners, we get them all through the week,
and yeah,
that was something we had a short conversation the other day about volleyball and about how much it has really blossomed. And what do you see, being one that sees it, calls it? I mean, it's a very fascinating sport, but it's not something that took off here, but it seems to now start getting some traction.
Yeah.
Why?
Okay, I want to make it very, very clear that I am not the only reason for that. I was coaching at Madison Central. I was the head coach way back in the 90s. I came in and learned the game from Skip Partridge. Fantastic fellow. I learned everything from him. And I thought I knew volleyball before that, but I didn't. Learned everything from Skip. And I was getting girls when I became the head coach coming to me trying out for the high school football, the high school volleyball team in the 9th grade, and they had never seen or touched a volleyball in sport.
Yeah.
It was slappy batty ball that they did at church. And so I wanted to make a change. I started the first middle school team in at least central Mississippi. We think possibly the entire state. And our middle school team would go around and play other high schools, JV teams, until we were able to get a couple of other schools on board. We also started the first recreational league in central Mississippi. At that time, club ball was just in its infancy, and there was only one club in the area. That was Mississippi Impact. And they had 3 teams, and a 13 and under team, a 15 and under team, and a 17 and under team. And everybody that played on one of those 3 teams. Well, now there are 8 clubs in the area, just in the metro area. And the Impact eventually was sold. And this is probably the biggest factor, I think, to Jenny Hazelwood, who used to be the head coach at Mississippi State and is now at USM. And she's the one that really took things. We had blossomed a little bit there and gotten more girls involved. We had over 300 in our league. And then Jenny came in and took over Impact and turned it into Infinity. And now they've got 3 or 4, maybe even more teams deep at every age level, starting young and going all the way up through 18. So it has really taken off. There are other groups in the area, Velocity, Cookie, just a wide variety of club processes for them. But we're not here to talk sports this morning.
Plenty of time. I mean, people want to know about what you do, honestly. I mean,
well,
I'll get a question like, what all does he do? Everything. If it's sports oriented, if it's world traveling oriented, if it's teaching the Utes oriented, you know, he's got it covered. And, there, you know, the retirement may be on the horizon, maybe not. We're hoping that the man, you know, continues, you know, his adventure in the West.
I still have the passion to teach. This is my 42nd year in the classroom.
That's right.
Still have the passion to teach. I'm getting pushed from all different directions, I guess. Family would like to see me retire and spend more time with them. And my wife certainly would like to travel. It's always been something she wanted to do, to go to Europe, specifically England, the UK. Our whole family are Anglophiles. Love British culture and music and history and literature especially, and of course the British theater scene is very much alive and well. She'd like to do some of that, I think, but I still love what I do in the classroom. I will say that it's getting harder to do it. I'm getting older, and that's a factor. I don't know. I have no desire to stop teaching, but I don't know. We'll just have to wait. I've been talking about retirement for 3 or 4 years now, and every year I sign that little piece of paper that says, I'm coming back. So,
well, you're still a young man.
Right. That's not what my body tells me in the morning. That's not what my body says in the morning.
Well, that leads me to, when you, you'll be traveling out to do some interesting stuff here soon out west for biology teachers,
mm-hmm.
and that's the other thing that you do. You're not only a bird enthusiast and an amazing, the voice of the Jaguars and a great husband and father and a great person to have come in and sit, but you also know a little bit about biology.
Just a little bit. We've done some research work. We, for 17 years, did research work with Dr. Phil Stouffer and Dr. Mark Woodry. With Dr. Woodry, who was from USM at the time, we did a couple of years of Henslow sparrow banding, and then we moved over to LSU. Actually, it was southeastern Louisiana when Phil Stouffer and I first hooked up to band Henslow sparrows. And then he moved to LSU, and we moved right along with him and continued banding Henslow sparrows. And much of the knowledge of the Henslow sparrow is due to the doctoral work of many of his students. And we were fortunate. I was looking for research opportunities for my high school kids, and we were fortunate to be able to work with Phil Stouffer and his students, including Eric Johnson, who is now the head of Audubon for all of Louisiana. In fact, I think he's the head of Delta Audubon for Louisiana, Mississippi, and Arkansas. So very fortunate to have worked with some of the folks we've worked with. We took a group of our students into East Central Mississippi and worked over there with the American Bird Conservancy on doing some point plot data analysis and gathering for a sustainable forestry initiative. We've just been very, very fortunate to be able to work with so many different people and to have our kids exposed to that. And I think it has done well by the kids. They've gone on, many of my students have gone on to very, very good careers in a variety of things. And we've got education directors at zoos and aquariums all over the country that came out of our program. And it's, you know, that's the reward. We never have been paid very well as teachers. Our reward is what happens with our students and what they end up becoming and how they affect society. So, and you mentioned going out west. I don't feel like I deserve plaudits and accolades at this point in my career. I think that I've reached that point where I am being recognized as a lifetime achievement kind of person. I am certainly not the teacher that I was 10 years ago for sure, and certainly possibly not even 5 years ago. I'm slowing down. The mind's not as sharp as it used to be, but I still love what I do, man, and I gotta finish strong for however long we are still working out there. So,
Well, I know your students don't want you to go.
No.
Wife and family would love to see you more, and the world of biology, it will be lesser for it. But that would allow you to, one of your other passions, those birds.
Right, and that's one thing. You know, if I retire, that I get to go bird watching every morning.
Man.
Just roll out of the bed and get into the backyard, head out to the reservoir, head to LaFleur's Bluff State Park. So many wonderful places right here around the metro to go birding. And I think that that's something that we'd like to do.
When you go down to LaFleur's Bluff, I know that now that you don't have the golf course there anymore, but the trails and everything down by the river and the swamps, what is your, if you say Central Mississippi, what is your favorite bird that you get to view, watch?
Ooh.
Out of all the ones around here, what would you say is your number one?
That's tough.
I know. Tough that, questions early in the morning. That's what we do here.
Here in Central Mississippi, that is tough. I have so many favorite birds. I have to admit they're probably mostly in other places here in Central Mississippi. I think the opportunity to see owls is fantastic. I love going out to the reservoir and seeing the bald eagles. We have them nesting now in several places here in Madison County and Hinds County and Rankin County. So the Tri-County area has several nests of bald eagles at this point. And, of course, we're moving into the time of year where eagles, hawks, a lot of the birds of prey are moving south to be able to take advantage of finding food easier in the cold weather. So my favorite in the entire Mississippi area.
And you can stick to Central Mississippi if you want.
But that makes it even more difficult. You know, if you get the whole state, then I can go down to the coast and talk about godwits or something of that sort. Reddish egret.
I'm trying to challenge you a little bit.
You've thrown the challenge, that's for sure. I think in the summertime, the painted bunting. Spring and summer, the painted bunting.
Gallo's a fan of that one.
Yeah, I love that bird. It is so gorgeous.
It
you
is,
know,
isn't it? I
mean, there's
so
a
much going on.
What's
you
going
say,
on?
You would say so much going on.
Oh, with that bird.
Bird, yeah.
Every color of the rainbow, dude. I mean, you can find hues of purple, blue, yellow, red. There's an old Indian legend.
I use
the term American Indian. You know, that's something that we could talk about. Let me finish the point on the bird first. There's an old Indian legend that the painted bunting was left over when the Great Spirit finished coloring all the birds, and he didn't have enough of any one color to color the bird. So what he did was take everything he had left over and paint a little bit here, a little bit there, and a little bit here, and a little bit there with everything he had left over, and used all of the colors of the rainbow to paint that one bird. And I just love that little analogy of the bird getting all of those different colors because the Great Spirit had run out. Just an interesting little story that the natives, had.
I love the indigenous native stories of the United States, and a lot of them tie together. You know, it's
they do.
Oral histories. The further west you go versus the east, most of them are just fascinating. You know, and I think one of those things that I wish we spent more time learning about some of those types of stories.
Well,
creation stories and, you know, because they were here before we were here.
That's right.
They know a little bit.
That's right. My mom was a reading specialist. She was an elementary school teacher and a reading specialist. She used to do a lot of consulting around the whole state after she retired. Actually, a little bit of consulting before she retired.
A little bit of consulting goes a long way.
Yes, it does. And she had me reading at a very young age. I think I've shared with my students. I read The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings back when I was 7 years old. Lord of the Rings is quite a hefty tome for a seven-year-old, but
I
loved it.
That's not bedtime reading.
I know. Well, I was reading much younger than that, actually. I had a little kickstart over there in Germany with the kindergarten program, the true kindergarten as it was envisioned by the Germans. Yeah, that's where we get the word. But I loved, when I was growing up as a kid, reading the biographies of all of the great Indian chiefs.
Yeah.
that that lived back in the 1700s and 1800s and studied people like Red Cloud and Crazy Horse and Tecumseh and Geronimo.
Pushmataha,
yes. Of course, Pushmataha is pretty close to us here.
Yeah, a little localized. Yeah. I love the creation story of the Choctaws and the Chickasaws. That's probably one of my favorites is as they Chocta and Chicksa, the brothers, you know, and they dug the hole in the ground every night as they finished their trek eastward. As they came out of the Pacific Ocean, they found a big log the creator had told them to tote, a totem, and every night they would bury it standing straight up so that it was pointing to the sky. And in the morning, whichever way it was leaning, that's the direction
that
the tribe
would
go until the end of the day. And they would repeat and, you know, rinse and repeat until when they woke up in the morning that the staff or the totem was standing straight up. That's where they were supposed to stay, and that was home. And then the two brothers, after a while, decided, you know, I think it was Chicks who said, "Hey, man, I want to kind of go north." And Chocta, I believe, was like, "Well, I don't want you to." And Chicks is like, "I need to." You know, so he went on his way, and that's where the Chickasaws came from. But beautiful story, and so much history in the Delta from, you know, is one of the interesting places.
Oh, yeah.
Being a bird man and an outdoor guy, the, you know, a grand hunting ground for so many different tribes that seemed to get along. During hunting
fairly
season.
Well, yeah, yes, they did.
Season, they said, "Hey, we're going to put all the problems aside." So it's kind of like the modern football season, you know. It's like, you know, you battle it out, but then, you know, it's over at the end. But I always loved the Delta for that because it seemed to be such a stomping ground for what you needed.
When I was
general store for American Indians.
Yeah, when I was in college, I worked for an entomologist, checking the cotton fields up in the Delta. Did that for a couple of summers, and it was amazing. You could walk through the fields in the Delta, the cotton fields, and especially when the cotton was low. Early in the season, as you walk through the fields, there would be arrowheads turned up by the plows, and I found a stone cell that's probably about, it's pretty close to a foot long, beautifully smoothed and polished stone cell, which was their hand axe that they used to use. And I still have that. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece. Had a little nick in the blade from where the plow turned it over. But if the plow hadn't turned it over and left it on top of the soil, I'd have never found it anyway. So, well, we're going to talk about birds here in just a little while. We want you to give us a call.
Our bird is at a wedding in New Orleans. So hopefully let's make sure the weather holds out. Miss Nellie Neal, a garden mama. So I wanted to give her a shout-out. And Claire, y'all have a wonderful day today. I know this is a special day for Garden Mama and her daughter.
Well, that is a day. You know, we've got that day coming up next month. We can talk about that later.
Good deal.
Give us a call this morning, and we'll talk about what's happening in your neck of the woods. The number is 888-808-8637. 888-808-8637. And we're going to be back in just a second here, right here, on Weekend Gardening. Garden Mama's out, but you've got the Birdman, Ken Hackman. We'll be here all morning until 10.
We are agriculture, the number one industry in Mississippi. We are 180,000 member families strong, a century of generations. We are grassroots Mississippi in all 82 counties. We are Unified, the largest general farm organization in Mississippi. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
And we're back here on Weekend Gardening. Nellie Neal having a very special day, and Ken Hackman, the Birdman, is sitting in her stead. We absolutely love being here with you. We've got Lance behind the glass. Lance, what can you tell us about today's weather?
Well, today's weather, well, I mean, it depends on where you are. But today, across Mississippi, you're going to have highs in the 70s, upper 70s, humid, potential rain, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, east and northeast winds of about 5 miles an hour, and precipitation around 70%. Pretty much across the state.
Wow.
So, hey, you know, make sure you got your umbrella or your slicker. You may need it today. I haven't seen that there'll be too much rain as far as accumulation, probably about a quarter of an inch up to a half an inch.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's see, now that you asked me a good question, so let me make sure on the Oxford area, which we'll get to Starkville too, mainly, because you got big ball games up there. You got some big games.
Well, state's at Tennessee, aren't they?
Yes, I'm saying it's, you know, that the North Mississippi up into Tennessee weather, that's going to affect the games today. Hopefully they'll be dry enough, but you never know. Memphis area weather, 70 high, east to northeast wind about 5 miles an hour as well. 70% chance of precipitation, about the same amount of rainfall. And tonight it just kind of continues into the evening, actually a little bit more of a chance of rain in the evening hours. So that kind of covers our weather for the day there.
Well, maybe whatever happens weather-wise will help out my Bulldogs up there in Tennessee.
Running the ball, that's always the key to a big game. I personally, you know, it's hard to win against good teams when you can't run. And so they're going to have to run the ball a bit today. The coastal area, you know, is about the same, 10 to 15 mile an hour winds, much less chance of precipitation, about 20%. Should be a little cloudy, though, and a much better day on the coast, it looks like, than central and north Mississippi. So bird watchers will be out.
If I had the time to get out, I would get out then. But yeah. I've got there is a tournament taking place. It's called the Rumble in the Jungle. And I will be hosting, or PA announcing, I guess you would say, for four basketball games this afternoon beginning at 1 o'clock. So I'm going to be indoors all afternoon long. So this is going to be my chance this morning to talk about what's going on outside, talk about birds and birding and gardening for the birds. We can answer questions about bird plants for you.
Well, I had one because I have a field that I'm going to next year. I want to get it ready to dove hunt it appropriately.
Oh, okay.
Not slowly do it. I mean, you know, throwing stuff and do it. I want to do it right. And the club, we've talked about it. It's a nice, you know, I'd say 14, 15 acre nice rectangular shaped field, long and a couple of hundred yards across, so it's a really good setup. Water is near, bayous, and so that was going to be my question to you, is what is the key in planning a dove field to, you know, to enforce success? What is the trick? And now that I've got plans and time and I want to do it right, give me your best, because we have a lot of dove hunters out there.
Right.
Number two, you got turkey hunters, and three, you got quail hunters out here too. And they all eat. And I know there's a lot of folks that want to hear about these things because I talk to them. And so if you could help us with that a little bit. I know that's not gardening, but it is much the same.
Right. I will have to admit that I've not done much growing of plants specifically for hunting. I will say that doves love Milo. That is one of the seeds that they really enjoy. And I don't know whether planting it and growing it that way would be helpful. Milo, sunflower, of course, is always a plant. Depending on, I guess you could let that grow all spring, summer, and fall and then plow it up, or just cut it down and leave it on the ground. However you wanted to handle that, I would think just leaving it there and letting it go to seed would be a way to go. But then you'd have to, for purposes of being able to see everything, you'd probably want to bring down the stalks if you use sunflower to see what would happen there.
It's got to be pretty good for the deer as well.
You know, oh, yeah. You know, yeah, yeah.
Like them some sunflowers.
They love them some sunflowers, if we're going to use the vernacular terminology there. They love them sunflowers.
Do they have to spit the seed out, though?
The deer?
I'm kidding.
I don't. You know. I don't think they do. I think they just take
the whole thing down.
Yeah,
they eat the whole thing.
Well, they eat acorns, so you know if they're going to take down acorns, they might as well eat the shell on a sunflower seed.
They were as good as a baseball player, you know,
that's
getting
them
the
out?
Seed out and throwing the shell. They just eat the whole thing.
Have you ever watched close-up footage of a cardinal or one of the other, you know, seed eaters using their tongue? They've got a barb on the tongue. And they use that barb to grab hold of the meat of the seed, and then as soon as they've got that in the side of their beak, then they use the tongue, and they're holding it with the side of their beak. Then they use the tongue to push the shell out of their mouth. It's just fantastic to watch.
How long would it take in evolutionary time for a human if all we did was like eat pistachios or where you have to get that seed out? Would we develop a barb on our tongue, do you think?
I'm hoping that we're not here as a race long enough, as a human species long enough for that to have to happen. When you think about
millions
things like...
Millions of years?
You're
the biologist here, sir.
If we're going to go that route, you know, I look back on things like the Kevin Costner movie, Waterworld.
Oh, yeah. Got the gills.
Got the gills going and webbed fingers and hands and toes. And
how long does that take? I mean, I studied it, but are we talking 100,000 years?
Hundreds, I would say.
Minimalist as far as adaptation, or could you get a lot accomplished in 100,000 years with adaptation?
Well, I would say hundreds of thousands of years, and we could get into the entire evolution versus creation argument there. Personally, I believe strongly in evolution, but as a Christian conservative, I'm also very much on the side of creation. I just think that God did it through the process of evolution.
I think we look at humans a bit too. I mean, man has grown much larger. It has a lot to do with our diet and has to do with the environmental factors, sunlight.
We're seeing evolution every single day.
And that is the purpose of life, is change. I mean, you know, constant is change. And I'm one of those like you. It's always been a great question to me, is evolution versus creation. But I, like you, I firmly believe there is a great creator, a God.
Absolutely.
That God gave us all the seeds of everything we need and gave us a kickstart and said, all right, let's see how this thing works.
Absolutely.
So you're in charge of your future, and don't be calling on me too much. I want to see how you guys do it. But we have the right to give him a holler and say, hey, please help us out.
You know,
need you.
I have to holler on a regular basis, too.
Don't you? I mean, I do. I find myself, you know, you'll just kind of be talking to yourself, and you'll hear, oh, Lord, will help me do this. You know, and you don't even know you're saying it, but it's there. You know, that's that mindset of, you know, that there's something greater and a higher power than yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I host a Bible study at school on Tuesday mornings. That's one of the other things that I do while I'm teaching. I've got a Bible study group, and I have a bird watching club. And between the two of those, I stay pretty busy. And I'm also, although I'm more of a liaison, we have a group of young people at my school, and also that's Madison Central, of course, at all of the other high schools in the metro area. We've got a group called the Metro Leos.
I'm a Leo, so.
But not in name. The Leos are the high school division of the Lions Club International. And we have a group of young people at Madison Central that are involved and throughout the metro area, high schools all over the place, both public and private. Some of the young people are involved in community service projects to help out their fellow man. And there's a lot that goes on. They work with kids at libraries. They help with nature trails. There was a botanical garden over at the reservoir that they helped get signage and weed pulling and everything of that sort.
Beautiful. So if you haven't seen it, if people haven't gone over, it's kind of tucked away by the library.
Right.
And it's right there off the little creek. I think that's Mill Creek, actually.
I think it is.
But yeah, I love that little walk through there. It's not the longest, but it's a beautiful little trek, and people use it a lot. And it's the botanical gardens. Mm-hmm. You don't know it's there till you know it's there.
Right. And, you know, that's the way it is with bird watching. I'm amazed and shocked all the time at the number of people that don't know that certain species live in our area. The painted bunting is an example.
I mean, I wouldn't have, and as Paul would have told me that in listening to you, I would have never known, because I have not seen one. You know, it's
We can take care of that.
Yeah,
we can take care of that next spring if you want to.
I want to see one live. Yeah.
Put you right on one.
Yeah, I need to. That's just, growing up with an artist as a grandmother, and pretty well known in her time, and she would say, "All right, come over here, play with it. Put some colors together." And then I'd finger paint or do something like that. But learning colors. But then you fast forward. I've got this beautiful finger painting where I'd, blobbed reds and greens and yellows on a piece of cardstock white paper, and then folded it and made the Warshag or whatever the kind of look. My mom ended up framing that. When I was a child, and she still has that. But it's all the colors of the painted bunny. And it looks like a bird, actually.
How about that?
So it's one of those, it's in my blood. I'm supposed to see this painted bunny,
Well,
I
tell
you
what, we're going to make that happen. We're going to take you bird watching, and we're going to get that painted bunny.
I love bird watching. I mean, I like duck hunting, mm-hmm. but I don't shoot as much as, people that hunt. I'm more of a watcher and appreciator. Then I go, yeah, that might be a good little delicious treat, and I'll have a few of them. But I'm not an overkill type. I don't even like limiting. I'm one of those. I'm going to get what I need and try to not take more than I need. So, but I love watching them. It's something to me, watching the eagle fly.
Well, soar. I am. Have you ever seen a pair of bald eagles in the courtship dance?
No.
Oh, man, that is something. They do it in the air.
The skies of the winter, during duck season. I can see we got a couple up there in Issaquena that are just, they're just beautiful.
They do it in the air.
Oh, really?
And it's just an amazing, well, the courtship dance, anyway.
That's what I'm saying,
the courting takes place in the air. They settle down for the actual mm-hmm. act itself.
So what is this? Do they frolic in the air, or are they basically circling, or what? I mean,
they will circle each other. They'll hook talons and spin around together.
Really?
It's really cool. Fascinating to watch. And then, of course, people see the eagles on TV, and they've always got this, this high-pitched, beautiful scream for eagles as they go by. But the sound of an eagle is nothing like that at all, and it bothers me that we send false images to so many people, and that's one of the things that I have to do as a teacher
is reteach
because we learn so much incorrectly through the movies or television or whatever it is that we're getting our information from previous generations. So much mistaken belief out there, don't touch that snake, it's got a triangular head. Well, the first thing that the harmless water snakes do is puff their jaws out to look more imposing. And as a result, they look like they have a triangular head, and people kill them thinking they're water moccasins. Not that the water moccasins should be killed either. I'm a firm believer that everything has its place on our planet. And all of these things have to be able to eat to survive. I have, and I've had this argument with people who are bright, intelligent people. There's not a snake on this planet anywhere that will chase a human being. I've had people say, well, I've been chased by a black runner. The northern black racer does not chase people. The deal is they don't have ears externally. They don't have ears, middle ears. They do have inner ears, and they can pick up vibrations with their belly. But you know what? They don't have the ability to know which direction those vibrations are coming from. So when you're walking in grasses, brush, whatever, when you're walking, that snake feels you coming. Usually, if you're walking heavily enough, they will take off and go. But the problem is they've got a 360-degree angle or arc, circle, any direction they want to go to try to get away from whatever it is that's coming.
And they could happenstance.
They could happenstance go your way. Yeah. There's probably about a 10%
chance. It's not like the bear going, that looks like a salmon dinner.
That looks
right
like
there.
Fun. So it's a matter of the snake actually trying to get away from whatever it is that's coming, but it doesn't know which direction to go.
I've never, as many years as I've spent in the woods, I'm 50, and I'd say there's 49 of those I've spent in the woods. I've never had a snake chase me.
I have had one northern black racer that came right at me, and I just looked at it, and it went right between my legs and kept going out the other side. So That's what they do. All right, folks, it's a caller-driven show, and we want to talk about what's going on in your yard. We want to talk about gardening for wildlife, for the birds. We'll answer your wildlife questions right here on Weekend Gardening, Nellie Neal Show. The number to call is 888-808-8637. Again, that's 888-808-8637. And we've got that C-Spire text line, the 601-879-4395. Give us a text, give us a call, let us know what's happening in your yard. Ask us questions here on Weekend Gardening.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned almost $100 million in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now, he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, Max and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused career jobs and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae at treasury.ms.gov.
Hi, I'm Sammy the Shovel, reminding you how important it is to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig anywhere in or around any homeowner's yard. It doesn't matter if you're putting in a new mailbox, installing a fence, French drain, sprinkler system, even a flower bed. You need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig, or you could end up responsible for a water line leak, utility line with gas or propane, or even worse. Safety is in your hands. Call 811 every dig, every time.
Looking for
always love the tunes when I get to sit in for Nelly. It's amazing. I go and pick my favorite music to listen to when I'm in the car, and then I get in here in the studio and I hear sound. I'm going, man, that's great. It's never something that I would look for, but it's always something that I want to listen to. And it's just so awesome.
Nellie's taste in music is extremely diverse, but she
so
also
is mine.
Yeah, she has a great, I would say, a great volume of music that she's accumulated for bumpers over the many years. And so we have those in the 602 and 603 range, and she, mm-hmm. You know, she's very orderly, ins and outs. And
all right.
And, but so, yeah, that was when I first started working with her. I'd come in, and she'd have me a music list. And she said, you got to change all of them. I don't like any of them. And they're all her songs, you know, but she's like, there's a certain order. So, yeah, whenever she goes, I come in now, and she's like, I trust you today. And so mm-hmm. Our listeners know when I play the music, because generally it's going to come out of my about 1,000 songs. And then when it's hers, she has such a great grouping, though. I love
right.
So many of them are pertinent to gardening or growing sure. Or, you know, and so it's always fun. I've learned a ton about music through her and Buddy. And then, believe it or not, Paul Gallo is amazing. And he comes up with some of the most obscure music, and you'll go, wow, where did you find that? I was digging around, and I love it, you know, because this radio, you know, that's really what we do a lot is, you know, everything
right.
Centers around the sound. Everything centers around some kind of music or a cut or something, because before we had the TV, that's what you had to do. You had to describe it, and you had to make it vivid for people like you do on a Friday night, or like Bob does. So I've learned a lot about music, you know, which I've always loved, but the mm-hmm. Layers and the depth and, you know, and people's taste in music is, you know, is really fun. To.
I've got a pretty wide taste myself.
I love
so many different things.
Yeah.
I was in my first opera when I was in the first grade. And I love opera. I love classical music. I love Broadway musical theater music. I love
Richard
rock.
Cross is a big Broadway guy. He's like, mm-hmm. Man, you know, I love the Broadway. I love a show, you know, and
yeah.
I grew up with it too. I think one of the first that I ever saw in New York was kind of spoils you when it's the Phantom of the Opera. And,
yes.
You know, and you're looking around, there's all this stuff going on, and this powerful music, you know, is just shaking you. And you, oh, it's amazing. You don't want to do that first if you don't want to be a theater person or
right.
Appreciate it. So,
my first Broadway musical to see was Phantom.
Yeah.
And it's also the first show that I've been able to see both on Broadway and at the West End in London. So that's the only show I've seen in both of the theater capitals, so to speak. So I have a great affinity for that particular show.
Well, that kind of, you know, it's to me, it's God created nature, so man created art.
And absolutely.
In some way of hoping to emulate it, you know, well, what the greatness is. And I never feel closer to just, you know, peace than being out, listening to the birds, listening to the breeze. And that's where music comes from, right?
Absolutely.
It comes from nature.
Absolutely. Every single bit of it.
And Mickey Hart with the Grateful Dead, you know, his Rolling Thunder, and listening to it on the percussion side, where they've gone out and recorded whales. And then reproduce that sound through music. And I mean, it's, to me, once you get into that world, it's absolutely mind-blowing what the potential and possibility is out there. And it seems a lot of that stemmed some of the great stuff from the 50s and 60s. Some of the great experimentation in music opened up so many different genres that have come from there.
Okay, so you're a producer here. I think it's time. I'm just listening to you this morning. I think it's time that we had the Lance Tolbert show.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
The last time I was on, you talked about what a fascinating person I was. I'm sitting here listening to you this morning, and this is the most we've ever talked back and forth during the show. You know, usually I'm sitting here waiting for people to call in, talking about birds, and we're ready for that to happen this morning for sure.
And they're listening, I promise you.
Yeah.
They're out there.
Wait, give us a call at 888-808-8637. That's toll free, 888-808-8637. We'll answer your questions about birds, birding. We can talk about what's happening in your yard with wildlife of any kind, bats, snakes, deer, you name it. Or you can text in if you don't want to be on the air. You can give us a text at 601-879-4395. That's our C Spire text line. But to continue what I was saying, Lance, you were talking about me. I'm listening to you this morning talking about so many different subjects. We've been bouncing all over this place this morning. You're a fascinating guy.
Well, Super Talk, Kim and Steve, they give me an opportunity to enjoy Mississippi and Mississippians, and I can't tell you how much of an honor it is to get to come hang out with our amazing state and the extremely talented people that come in and out of this building, or that we get, you know, through C Spire text line, or we get. I mean, this is absolutely a blast. I couldn't imagine a job where I get to challenge myself any more than what I get to do, learning and different topics. And, you know, it seems like a lot, you know, when you're dealing with handyman and in gardening and politics and sports and then Mary Whedon in Legal Hour. But I love it, you know, and being able to do the weather in the Delta and the multitude of shows that they allow me to kind of edit and load. It's just wonderful. I mean, I get to know people like America's Roundtable, which is Joel Anansami and Natasha.
Right.
Great people. I mean,
right.
Just talking to them, the heart of gold. I mean, it's just really fun. So, yeah, I mean, I think this job allows me a lot of freedom, as long as I don't mess it up. And
right,
you know, that's the thing. You got to make sure you don't go off somewhere you shouldn't.
I never thought about the aspect of you being back behind the glass. And that's just a term we use in radio, folks, to talk about the producer who is running the show for real, back behind the glass. Never realized or never thought about how much you were able to glean with the disparate variety of shows that exist here on Super Talk.
I wouldn't have it any other way, honestly. I will say, when I get back, I'll tell you. I mean, getting a chance to ride along in the police world, getting to investigate the correctional facilities and do things. I have so many great opportunities that, you know, it's just, I love doing it.
And
do it just for my personal growth. It's not like I'm trying to, you know, I got your story. It's
okay,
just
so I have an idea.
Let me get this call real quick.
I have an idea. You were talking earlier about my retirement. I think that when that time does come, and it's not any time real soon, okay? I'm not convinced that it'll happen this year. I'm leaning toward looking in that direction at some point soon, but I don't know that it's going to happen imminently. And what we really need to do is for you to get your own show, Lance, and then I'll take over your job back behind the glass, and I'll become a producer, and I'll get to learn all these wonderful things that you say you're learning from all of the different people out there.
Oh,
and
awesome.
that would be great.
Oh, I learned the other day. I got to go to a prison boxing match. Really, you know, absolutely well done. You know, seeing the gardening being done over at Central Mississippi Correctional Facility, Dirt Dauber. He's an inmate, but he does so many things there and grows so much. I mean, you're talking about a green thumb and a super interesting guy. And you know, it's just an honor for people like Burl Kane to allow me that leverage to get in there and learn and see what's going on.
That's fantastic.
John Hunt, Deputy Commissioner. I met so many wonderful people. And it's not like what you see on TV, you know?
Oh, no.
It's just not.
No.
And same with riding alone or learning, you know, some of the things that go on in here with the law enforcement. It's you know, it is fascinating. But it's learning about people. It's what make people tick.
People make the world go round.
Right. And they're always, hopefully always will be here. It won't just be me.
That sounds good. That sounds good. All right, we've got the break coming up, and we'll be back right after that. Want to remind everybody, give us a call. We want to talk to you about what's going on in your yard. We'll answer your questions about gardening for the birds, gardening for wildlife, or just questions about wildlife in general. Give us a call at 888-808-8637 or text us at the CSpire text line 601-879-4395. Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama right here on Weekend Gardening.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
You know that nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. A lot of businesses are losing opportunities to get new customers if they're not online. With the power of SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital, you can reach potential customers and get more referral and repeat business. The highly trained and trusted team at SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital is ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today.
Logan Farms and
from the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
You know why I haven't started talking yet, right? I love that piece of music. When I was first courting my wife, she used to play guitar quite a bit. Very, very talented player. I could listen to her play that on her. She had a 12-string guitar. She still has it. A 12-string guitar, and she could finger pick that on that 12-string guitar. And man, I'm telling you.
I tried to learn how to do it, and I was not good at it.
Yeah.
It's worth trying.
She was amazing. I miss those days just getting to hear her play. Okay, we have a caller on the line, and I am so excited because William in Mount Pleasant has a question about barred owls, and I love my barred owls. Hello, William. You're on the air with the Birdman.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely.
The last few years, my wife and I have gotten fascinated once we discovered what we were hearing was barred owls. And my question is, we hear them at different times of the year, and sometimes we hear a lot of them together. And other times we hear them solo. The question is, can you kind of go through the calendar year and tell us why we may be hearing them, what's going on.
Sure.
We're just curious. And if you have any tips on seeing them, we hear them much more than we see them.
Okay.
And often when we see them, it's dark and it's just a flash, you know.
Right.
But anyway, that kind of thing, if you could tell us why we may be hearing them certain times of year, what's going on, what's their yearly cycle like?
William, you have just made me a very happy man because I love barred owls so much. What you're hearing, and this is going to be pretty close to the time, if they haven't already started, you should be hearing their individual calls calling back and forth at this point. The solo or duet calls, either one. It is time for them to start looking for mates and calling back and forth with the who cooks for you all call that I just absolutely love. They are in the process right now of attracting mate and reproducing and getting started. Owls, generally in our area, are the first birds to lay their eggs. And the great horned owl and the barred owl especially, the little eastern screech owl is a little bit later. But the barred owl should be nesting here very soon. Now, you're going to hear them talking back and forth, and you'll hear the single and duet calls from them as the nesting season progresses, and they'll lay their eggs. The young will hatch sometime in January, typically December, January, and they will continue that back and forth. Then you'll hear, beginning in January, February, you'll start to hear the young calling and begging for food. When that happens, you get a little fun, and that's when they get a little excited. And as they grow, you will hear however many young they have. Let's say that they end up with three youngsters. You will hear them going back and forth with a wah, 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 wah. Kind of call. I tell you what, I don't do that very well. We'll pull it up and.
No, that's great. That sounds just like it.
Well, no, I can do a few calls. I do the who cooks for you call. It's kind of a.
Absolutely, I'll tell you. The first time we heard them, we had no idea what it was, and the first thought that came to mind were monkeys. Sounds like monkeys in the
tree. I could hear that. Let me see if I can give
they,
a good one here.
They love cutting up. So, you know, like the long one, you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. If that's the one you say is the feeding, who, what's for dinner, or I'm cooking for you call?
Who cooks for you, okay. Who cooks for you all. Let me see if I can pull something up here.
Yeah.
And you'll hear that as they talk back and forth. Here is the fledgling looking for food. That's the little ones looking for food. And then here is their... That's just kind of a general caterwauling back and forth amongst the members of the family.
So that's the whole family together. Like we've heard this several times, very close, like right above us, even though we couldn't see them.
Right,
it was dark, and that's what when it kind of gets real excited and crazy when it turns into that. So that's the family together, just.
Uh-huh.
Hanging out, nothing going on specifically.
It's just a lot of fun back and forth. I tell you, there are several things that you can do if you want to see them. They will utilize a nest box. They have a number of different ways that they'll nest, but they will utilize a nest box. And you can get a perfectly built, now you can look up online and find the instructions for building one yourself, but they have them already built and ready to go up at Wild Birds Unlimited. limited here in the Jackson area. It's at the LaFleur's Gallery Shopping Center. That will provide them a place to nest. So they're there very close by. The other thing is, if you feed the birds in the backyard, you will find very quickly that depending on how you feed the birds and how effective you are in keeping things clean, if you don't keep things clean, and it's not too hard to let things go a little bit, let some of that seed fall out on the ground and you'll have rats and mice and things. They're there anyway. You're not increasing their likelihood to survive there. Not really. But that will attract rats and mice, especially at night, to come in and look for those tidbits of seed that are falling out of your feeders. And then your owls will come down and feed off of those. And if you've got some floodlights, you know, shining out over the backyard, they don't mind. You don't point them directly at the feeders, but they don't mind coming through light to take prey. I can assure you of that. That's that's why you see so many that are killed on the side of the road. They sit on telephone lines and telephone poles waiting for mice. People throw trash out. And there's food all up and down the side of the road, and it's easy to find at the edges of the road. And when a mouse or a rodent of some sort is crossing the road, those owls will fly down after it. They don't pay any attention at all to the lights that are coming, and that's how they get hit.
Right. Well, we watch a nesting site. It's on a farm behind us that an old dead tree that's very tall.
Uh-huh.
And we've watched them flying out of that, and we can hear them call from there at different times of the year. And so they've nested there for several years.
That's excellent.
But we're not seeing them up close. We don't have a great look at them, but we certainly can watch that. But we've just become fascinated by them, and I do appreciate your information.
They're fascinating creatures. I've held quite a few of them over the years, mostly birds that were injured and brought in to me, and then I would get them to the proper authorities, because it takes a very special federal license to be able to rehab hawks and owls, and I have allowed my license to lapse because I'm so busy I haven't had the time to really take care of an injured bird. I may pick that back up after the retirement days begin, but we're not talking about that R word just yet.
I understand. Thank you. Y'all have a good day.
You too. Thanks for the call. That was William in Mount Pleasant.
I'm fascinated because I sit out in my backyard and listen all the time to barred owls. How many are usually in this family? Because, okay, if there's over 100 acres, it seems, there's quite a few that like to
and they'll talk back and forth. Yeah. Now, once those younger birds are old enough to take care of themselves completely, the parents are going to drive them away. There's only so much food in a given area. It's what we call, I love it. This is part of why I'm getting older. Things just don't come out. Carrying capacity. There's a carrying capacity of how much food is available for a bird in an area. So typically the young are going to be pushed out of the way once they're old enough to take care of themselves so that the parents can continue feeding off of what's there.
So that means that the youngsters are going to at some point be told, go do your own thing.
Well, if they
don't. And how far do they push them out?
Until they can find enough land to support themselves. Okay. Carrying capacity is a very interesting thing. If you look at cycles, say up in the taiga, lynx and snowshoe hares, lynx feed on snowshoe hares. The lynx is the Canadian version of a bobcat, and as Jerry Clower called it, a souped-up wildcat.
I remember, up wild
yeah, cat. Had tushes coming out of his ears. That's a lynx. We don't have them down there, so I don't know where Jerry was when he had that story. But they feed on snowshoe hares, and what will happen is there's just so many snowshoe hares in an area. Well, that is the carrying capacity on how many lynxes can live there to feed on those snowshoe hares. Well, the lynxes will live there, they'll eat up the snowshoe hares, and the snowshoe hare population drops. Well, then what's going to happen is that the lynx population will have to drop because there's not enough food to feed more than one. And when the lynx population drops, then the snowshoe hare population goes back up. When the snowshoe hare population goes back up, the lynx population will go back up. And it's one of these things where...
the ebb and flow of nature.
Right. The ebb and flow. And those barred owls, you know, if there's enough food for a clan to stick around, there's enough food for a clan to stick around. If not, then the parents will have to drive the young away. And that's typically what happens. They also... I didn't catch, but I meant to ask William exactly what kind of habitat he had. The barred owls like a really swampy kind of area. I often find them near water, in low places in the woods, deciduous woods with low, almost wet vegetation a good part of the year. And they're just a wonderful I've heard them called swamp owls
I was going to say that, you know, the ones here in central Mississippi have the exact same pitch, call, everything as the ones in Issaquena in the Delta.
Right.
The Delta being much more swampy, bayous everywhere, and they seem to be similar to the coyotes. They seem to occupy probably a smaller, a little area, maybe because there's more food. You know, I don't know. The coyotes, you can hear the same. They're in packs.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to disperse as much. And the barred owls, where I am in the Delta, seem to, you'll get 10 of them in a smaller area, whereas here it seems like they're spread over, they'll say 5 or 10 maybe spread over a larger area.
Right.
And maybe it's, that's why I asked, because I was always curious what the deal was. Was it food-based, or was it basically, hey, just get out of the nest, Junior. It's time for you to go do your thing. So what you're saying is it's mostly food based, and they're going to tell them, hey, you got to go do your thing.
Sure. Okay. Sure.
Now, the big white birds that you see in the same area, swamps.
Those are herons, and egrets.
And those things get huge. I mean, egrets. There's hundreds and hundreds of them.
Right.
Where are they coming from?
Well, the egrets are here all along. The problem, what they'll do is they'll travel around where the water is, and egrets are fishers. Okay. They'll eat frogs, snakes, small fish.
No wonder I see so many of them. Where I see them, I'm like, all right, well, that answers the question.
Yeah,
there.
And they will come in because, you know, the fish are plentiful in bodies of water, especially small fish that are not being constantly fished by fishermen. The fishermen want the bigger fish. There's a lot of little fish, what we would call feeder fish or something
like
that.
Well, they must like gar, too, because, I mean,
they'll take gar.
Carp and gar must be delicious to an egret.
I've not seen an egret take carp, but I'm sure a little carp that's young, they would take. Some of the funniest memes I've ever seen involve egrets, and they're a beautiful white bird. Now, we do have, and this is something to think about, we've got a beautiful bird that looks just like an egret to the untrained eye, and that's the little blue heron. When it is young, it's white, and it's not until it starts to grow up that it will trade out those white feathers for the blue feathers it'll get, sort of a slate blue, gray blue.
Where's the native habitat for a blue heron?
They're here.
As far as those, do they like water, fields?
Water.
Water?
Yeah. You're not going to find them out in an open field unless something really unusual is going on, heavy rains.
Is that what it is?
It's just that they're an aquatic, I guess you'd say semi-aquatic type of bird that needs water. I've never seen one away from water that I can think of except to fly from one place to another.
I catch them in the hundreds in the shallow bayous where they can...
The little blue heron?
The big white egrets.
Oh, the big egrets.
I mean,
okay.
There'll be hundreds of them. And it generally, where you see them most concentrated is as the summer... you know, wands on and the water starts evaporating and they'll get in those
pools. I want you to do me a favor.
It's like a
I want you to do me a favor. Start paying attention the next time you see that big group of them and pick out the differentiation in sizes, because you've got the great egret.
Yeah.
We also have the little blue heron that's going to be white at that time, and we've got the snowy egret, and the snowy is smaller than the other two.
Okay.
You actually have three different sizes of those birds, and if you'll stop and take your binoculars,
I'll take my binoculars
and look,
picking them apart.
You'll find them and put them apart. Now, the easiest way to tell the snowy egret is the black bill and the golden slippers. Snowy egret has bright yellow feet as an adult. The immature, it's a duller yellow, and the yellow goes all the way up the back of their legs, which is really interesting. But, people see those white And I hear people call them cranes all the time.
Yeah.
People see the white egrets, and they just don't realize how much differentiation there is there. And that's one of the things that makes bird watching so fascinating to me, is the opportunity to get out and look and enjoy and learn and find out things that you didn't really know before. And y'all, the beauty that has been created for us and is out there is phenomenal. And all you have to do is experience it. Tell you what, you can experience it too. I'll tell you how. Give us a call here this morning at 888-808-8637. That's 888-808-8637. Or you can dial the C Spire hotline, text line rather, at 601-879-4395. And we'd love to know what's going on in your yard, answer your questions about birds and gardening for the birds. You're listening to Ken Hackman, the Birdman, right here on Weekend Gardening.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from three licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
Do you ever feel like you're in the dark? Well, with a propane generator, you'll never be in the dark again, at least when the lights go out. Enjoy the comfort and safety of knowing you have a propane generator always ready when the electricity goes out. Propane generators assure you'll always have power. Propane-fueled, clean cooking, hot water on demand, warm and consistent heat, and power when you need it most. Why would you choose anything else? Energy for everyone. Propane. Visit mspropane.com. That's mspropane.com today.
Gallo here for...
Just every now and then, sometime, Nellie Neal, the Garden Mama, is out, and that gives Ken Hackman, the Birdman, the chance to come in and see y'all this morning and get to talk to y'all. I'm here to talk about gardening for the birds, gardening for wildlife. We just finished talking to William up in Mount Pleasant about some wonderful barred owls. We talk about songbirds and seeds and all kinds of wonderful topics here, but you got to give us a call. The number to call is 888-808-8637. That's 888-808-8637. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. And then, of course, our C Spire text line for those of you that don't want to be on the air per se, 601-879-4395. That's 601-879-4395. 4395.
I have something for you.
Okay.
I was thinking, we were talking about eagles earlier, then we moved on to the barred owls, and that led me to blue jays.
Okay.
Because blue jays are extremely territorial. They're aggressive. They perceive hawks and owls, things like that, that are going to...
As threats,
as threats. And I've always watched the blue jay in fascination because they're very... instigative almost at times. They, you know, if they perceive any type of threat or anything in their little area, and I've got one that really is, you know, especially I think breeding season probably is the most, but what a beautiful bird. He loves toying with my cats. He loves toying with my dog. He's just a funny dude. But tell me a little bit about blue jays.
Well, blue jays are members of the Corvidae.
Corvidae.
And the corvids are a group of bird that includes your jays, your crows, your ravens.
Say they're extremely intelligent.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And I'm not
when
sure.
You say bird brain, you can't talk about the corvid. You can't talk about those guys.
No, and I think they are the most intelligent of the birds, the corvids are. People talk about how brilliant the parrots are. Parrots.
Well, that was another question. That's funny you hit it because I was going to ask you about parrots later. Like, what makes these guys tick?
Well, the parrots are excellent mimics, but I think that as far as pure intelligence goes, that the crows and the jays have them beat.
Really?
Yeah. Well, there are birds that can mimic all over the world.
Yeah.
And we think of the parrots.
The parrot gets all the cake, you know?
Right, because of the fact that it's such a bright and colorful bird. You get a bright and colorful bird that can actually talk to you. Well, they don't really talk. They're mimicking sounds, and they learn sounds at different times. If you come in the door and say hello to your bird every day, that bird is going to learn to say hello.
Pavlov's law, basically, with the dog and the bell.
Exactly. Pavlovian response is exactly what that is. And you can get them to say something that you want them to say just by carrying out a certain action. And the corvids are so much brighter than that. We used to have trouble. My grandfather, I grew up down on the Mississippi coast. My grandfather at one time had the largest chestnut orchard in the state of Mississippi. And he also grew pecan trees, a lot of pecans, a lot of chestnuts, and a big problem were the crows. And my daddy told me about the time I was about 10 years old or so. I got my first shotgun when I was young. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 50 cents. Now, that was big to a kid back then. I'll give you 50 cents for every pair of crow's feet you bring me. And I would see the orchard just covered up in crows. Go get that gun. As soon as they saw that that shotgun, they were gone. And you could walk all through that orchard without a gun, and they would literally be within feet of you. And then, of course, you go back into that orchard just with a stick, with a gun, with anything, and they all disappear. They knew the difference, and they're bright, intelligent birds. They know how to store things up. There is a wonderful, wonderful story, and I'm trying to remember if it's from the book Wild Animals I Have Known, which is a fantastic book that I haven't read since probably I was about 6 or 7. There's a wonderful book called Wild Animals I Have Known. I think that this story is from that book, but if not, I'll find out later where it's from. But a gentleman that watched blue jays gathering nuts and acorns and whatnot and going and putting them in a hole. And he followed them to see what was going on. And they were carrying these acorns, and they were storing them in a hole in the side of a cabin. And it filled up. It was an abandoned cabin, and it filled up the inside of that cabin. And there were just tens of thousands of these acorns inside that cabin where the jays were stocking them away. And they've got so much capability. Okay, we've got Davis on the line in the Lone Star area. And Davis, you have a barred owl story. Go ahead. You're on the air with the Birdman.
Well, I actually have two stories, and we'll go temporally. So we'll go with the earliest one.
Okay.
I'm a consulting forester.
Oh, excellent.
And as a result, I find myself traveling all over, basically anywhere south of I-20. And this was about 30 years ago. I was driving a lonely road in South Mississippi, and just alone to my thoughts, and suddenly, whack, there's this big impact on the side of my truck, and I'm like, whoa, what is that? And I stop, and it's this lonely road in the middle of nowhere, and I look back, and there's this owl sitting in the middle of the road.
Uh-huh.
And I realize what happened is he had just flew right into the side of my truck. In fact, right inside of the driver's side window. And I'm like, well, darn, I killed an owl. So I walked back there and I looked at it. And it looked up at me and then its eyes rolled at the back of its head. And it just kind of falls back. And I'm
right.
Like, well, this is terrible. I hate this. But I didn't want it to stay in the middle of the road and just become roadkill. So I put it in the seedling box. And I drove maybe another 5 miles or so. And this was dark. And my second thought was, I better check on that owl, just in case, you know.
Right.
And I opened that seedling box, and it looked up at me and looked up around, and it didn't know what had happened. So I just backed up, and it flew off. And it was a smaller owl, probably, I don't know, maybe a foot in height.
That's about the right size, probably a male.
I'm surprised at what happened. Right.
They have a tendency when they fly into something, and we see this with windows a lot, not necessarily car windows, that's a first, but they will fly into a window and it stuns them. and they will be stunned, and it takes them a while. Either they'll have internal brain injury or internal injuries of some sort, or they'll just be stunned and knocked silly for a little while, and after a few minutes, they'll get up and fly away. During that time that they're on the ground, yeah, if it's a small songbird or something, they're very, very vulnerable to being taken by a cat or another bird, a hawk or something. But a larger bird like that, you were very lucky to find him. And typically that's what they need, is a little calm, little quiet, little nurturing, and a few minutes later they're able to get up and take off. That's a fantastic story. I love that, Davis. Thank you. What's your second one?
Well, okay, this is because of where I live, it's in just a mixed terrain, piney woods with creek bottoms, and we have a couple of swampy areas nearby. And so as a result, in the evenings, you can hear the owls talking to each other.
Right.
And normally it's a jabbering. I actually enjoyed some of the calls you mentioned because that kind of made sense to me, listening to them, because it's a very old area of the state, and so there's a lot of old structures, so there's not a lot of population, and so they do a lot. There's a lot of populations, and you can kind of pay attention to them. But this was just a funny story. I was listening to two owls talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of at distance. So one would speak, and then the other would speak back, and they were just kind of jabbering apart. And then a third one decided to get in on the mix. A third one from a little bit other distance, right? And it spoke up, and the other two got real quiet.
Yes.
And just totally ignored that owl. And about 2 minutes later of complete silence, the other two started talking again. And then this poor third guy, boy, he must have been Charlie Brown, because he tried to get in on the conversation, and they got real quiet again. Whoever it was the owl that nobody wanted to chat with.
Probably, I'm just speculating here. Sounds like maybe one of their young or another bird from somewhere else trying to look for territory, and they did not want that bird to know where they were. They use their hearing a lot of times, and the calls they use to locate each other. And if there's no call going out, then the location can't happen. Interestingly enough, and I don't know if you've ever looked at some diagrams, owls' ears are not symmetrical on either side of their head. Their ears are, you know, you can close your eyes and find out which direction a sound is coming from, because it hits one ear before the other one, and the brain lets you know what direction you're looking at. Owls have that, but they also have one ear is higher on their head than the other. So they're able to hear literally in 3D and know exactly where a sound is coming from, up and down, left and right. And there are video clips available out there where you can see, a great gray owl flying in complete blind situation, flying through trees, going in and around through trees, and then after flying for 150 yards or so, or 150 feet or so, crashing through snow and taking a mouse or a vole or a lemming or something like that that was a foot under the snow that the owl could never see. But he was able to fly 150 feet or 200 feet or so and crash through that snow and pull the vole out and absolutely get his prey. Amazing ability to hear in three dimensions and know exactly where something is.
We in forestry school during the wildlife section, we had to determine, we actually used owl pellets. I dissected a bunch of owl pellets.
No, I love doing that.
The rodent population in an area. And so we had to pull out our dichotomous key, and by looking at bones and skulls and whatnot, you know, what rodents were in the area. And we were using the owls since they were obviously going to be the most effective collectors of rodents.
Right. That's something I used to do with my students. So many of those kits and things that we order have become so expensive, and I have 19 tanks and aquaria in my classroom that I maintain with specimens all the way from sponges all the way up to mammals. So we pretty much cover the breadth of the animal kingdom. I don't have any live birds in the classroom right now, but we have done that in the past. So we've got everything that we study in the classroom alive. And taking care of all of that takes up most of my money, and I don't get to do things like buy owl pellets anymore. So we do what we can to teach the young people. Man, that's a great pair of stories about barred owls, Davis. The one flying into the side of the car, that's just so wonderful. You know, we talked about how owls will swoop down. They'll see a mouse or something lit up by the headlights, and there they go. So many of them get killed. That's the first time I've heard of a barred owl or a great horned either one flying down after prey and hitting the side of a vehicle. I think that's a nice story. I'm gonna remember that. I'm gonna tell your story to others in the future.
It's a good one because we were both just as surprised at what happened.
Yeah, that's a great one, Davis. Thanks for the call this morning, man. That's good stuff right there. All right. And we're talking about gardening for the birds. We can talk about seed preferences. It's that time of year. You know, a lot of people don't think about feeding the birds in the summertime. But boy, when it gets cool, everybody realizes that those birds need fat. And the best way for them to get it is by eating seeds, sunflower seeds. Black oil sunflower seeds have a lot of fat in them. And that's probably the number one preferred seed among all people to feed the birds, because it's the number one seed that is preferred by the greatest majority of birds. Now, I personally prefer a blend. I love the Wild Birds Unlimited Deluxe Blend or Supreme Blend. Either one of those is wonderful. And for those of you that may be gardeners, you may not want to have bird seeds in your yard. Well, the good thing is there is also a bag called the No Mess Blend. Now, I'm going to freely admit that it's not cheap, but a bag of No Mess will not grow up in your yard. So the birds are getting pure seed, no shells. It goes a lot further because of the fact that it's not shelled. And, you know, that takes up a lot of the space in a bag of seed, is the shells and the air between the shells. Well, the No Mess is packed in there pretty tight. You get an awful lot of good meat. Nut meat, of course, is what I'm mentioning. Truly not nuts, but seeds. You get a lot of good meat in there for the birds. And that bag may be more expensive, but it goes a lot further. And that's a good thing, is that No Mess Blend. Love that at Wild Birds. Okay, Ken Hackman, the Birdman, here with you. We're filling in for Nellie Neal, the Garden Mama, this morning. Love to talk to some more of you, answer questions. We could even play What's That Bird? Name That Bird if you want to. Anything in your yard you can't identify, give us a call. We'll see if we can tell you what it is. You're listening to Weekend Gardening right here on the Garden Mama's Show.
Nowadays, most people go online to look at a business before they spend their money. Do you have an old, outdated website or just a Facebook page and still not bringing in customers? Targeted digital advertising from SuperTalk Mississippi Media Digital's highly trained and trusted staff is the answer. We're ready to work with you to help your business capitalize on the power of digital marketing. Call 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com to get started today.
We have one voice, the voice of agriculture. We have one job, growing the products you need every day. We have one mission, fighting for agriculture and rural Mississippi. We have you in mind, caring for your private property rights. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
And we are back on On the Weekend Gardening Show, Nellie Neal taking a well-deserved break, actually having a very special day. She's attending a wedding, and it's a very special wedding. It's not hers.
And she's been doing a lot more than attending, too.
I'm sure.
Claire's had her busy, busy.
Yeah, we're in that same process. My youngest, and I was just texting her while we had the break, my youngest is getting married here in about 6 weeks. So
I saw a beautiful bouquet, or multiple bouquets, that Nellie shared. So just because she's not with us today, don't think for a second that she does not have her eyes and hands on some flowers.
Absolutely.
It is a beautiful setup.
Absolutely.
So it's going to be a wonderful day for Claire and Miss Nellie. Hey, I wanted to, before we got back, before we leave today,
okay,
I love, you know, Native American culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the, you know, symbolism and attaching things to emotion. But the blue jay, back to the blue jay.
Okay.
According to the Indians, a blue jay means trustworthy and loyalty. And if you have a blue jay look at you and he stares at you, then that's generally at a time when you're the most down and you have self-doubt. And that blue jay is looking at you to tell you, think higher of yourself. Pick yourself up. Get back to work. And so it's interesting. I love the but it was one of those things that a blue jay, although it has that aggressive nature,
well,
it has
such
a loyalty connotation with it.
And our Native Americans came up with so much of their lore and their legends and myths, if you will, based on actual activity that they noticed in the wild. They witnessed it and they watched it. And while it has to have some connection somehow, and that's the way that lore gets passed on. I'll have to see if I can do some reading.
They say a lot of times when you do see a blue jay, it is a time. And I see one regularly, but it's funny because, you know,
I see them every day.
You go through the gamut of emotions. And it says you'll see them most when you have the most self-doubt or you're down a little bit, according to the Indians, American Indians.
Obviously. Right.
But it signifies when they look at you in the eyes, they eyeball you. They don't look at you crossways, but they look straight ahead. That means you're a loyal and trustworthy person.
Now, I'll have to give that a shot when I see the blue jays in my backyard.
Yeah, I want you to test yourself.
I see them every day at my house. You know, even if I'm not outside for more than just a couple of minutes going from the house to the car, there's always jays flying around back and forth in my backyard. Always.
Now, do all birds share in nest building? Because I know the corvidae, they do. They, like the mama and the daddy, they'll build nests together, right?
No, they don't.
They don't, okay.
They don't. Not all birds do is the answer. They don't do. Some birds will cooperatively build a nest with some species. There are some species where a male builds a nest and hopes that the female comes along that wants that nest, and she'll inspect the nest, and if it's not to her liking, she'll
like
go find another male.
Or the right? She doesn't like the quarter round or the molding. She's out.
She's out of there. There are some very interesting birds in Australia. I don't know if you're familiar with bower birds.
No.
The males build these beautiful bowers out of grasses and whatnot, and it's like a little entrance. And then they collect different things in nature to decorate the bower.
Wow.
Some species prefer like little blue flower petals, and they'll color it all over the place.
How cool.
And the ones that choose that super blue, it's the satin bower bird, and they will choose that blue, and it's all over the place, and they have gotten used to human beings because for the last number of years, I'd say the last 15 years, I've seen, when I go over there, I do tours in Australia quite frequently, and when I'm over there, I see these bowers that the birds have created, and in with the blue flower petals and the blue material are now blue plastic straws and blue bottle caps from water bottles.
No
and
way.
The most amazing thing I saw,
little
and I
designers.
Don't know how in the world the bird got them, but there was a pair of sunglasses with blue plastic frames. They're cheap sunglasses, just cheap
the best
blue.
Kind,
but all the blues match. The blue straw, the blue sunglasses, the blue bottle caps, all the same shade of blue.
So his girlfriend, it's just amazing. And wife just loves that exact color blue, right?
Well, I don't know how successful he was or not. The nest was there. The Bowery was there.
He worked hard.
She may have wanted another color, but he worked awful hard. And most of the satin bower bird nests that I've seen had that blue color for the bower. There's so many really interesting ways that birds carry out the nesting process. Just off the top of my head, did you know that there is over an entire mile of spider web in every hummingbird nest, the ruby-throated hummingbird nest? They build their nests out of lichens, the foliage lichens that grow on trees and or stumps or rocks or whatever. They build their nest out of that, usually on a tree that has lichens growing on it, and they'll build it on a slightly downward sloping branch, and it's about the size of a quarter, but they do those lichens, they wrap them up and connect them all together with spider web and weave the spider web around it to hold it all together. And then they'll go out and collect things like cattail, the fluffy down at the top of cattails when the flower's opening up. And they'll take that and they'll stuff the nest with that on the inside to create that nice soft nest that they've got. And it's just fascinating how different bird species nest. The weavers that build those beautiful woven cavities that they have with the openings on the underside. One of my favorites when I go, and I'm going again this summer, I'm leading a tour to Costa Rica, and there are areas in Costa Rica where they have the Montezuma Oropéndolas, and they build these long hanging baskets that hang down, and they're just phenomenal. You'll see, like, they're colony nesters, so there'll be an Oropéndola nest. If you find one, you have usually found anywhere from 5 to 15 of them on a single tree, all hanging down, and it's just a magnificent thing to do, is to see those Oropéndolas. And their mating ritual is amazing. The male will tilt forward and hang upside down as he gives his call, and it's fascinating. Before you leave today, you need to see a video. I'm going to pull one up. You need to see a video of a Montezuma Oropéndola.
Yeah, I need to see that
mating call. It's amazing to watch.
That's awesome. Well, there was two questions before we get out of here. I think that our listeners would like to know. Earlier, you were talking about the painted bunting. I've seen one in the Jackson area. Where can they be seen? And number two, you should write a book indicating where certain species are found in North Mississippi, such as the goldfinch.
Right. Well, goldfinches are found all over the state in the wintertime. In the summer, their numbers are not quite as big. We are starting in the metro area, specifically Madison County, I know of some, and Yazoo County. We're starting to see goldfinches nest this far south. They have been nesting up in northern Mississippi for quite some time, more so over in the northeastern corner than other places that I'm aware of. Most of your seeding eating birds, and I don't know where in North Mississippi the caller was from, but most of the seed-eating birds kind of stay away from the Delta area to a degree because of the use of pesticides and herbicides, and that can have an effect on things. Now, there are a lot of seed eaters that do go in because a lot of the seeds that come out of some of the plants that are grown up there don't bloom and don't seed until after the use of the pesticides is beyond or gone by. So there's that activity. There are books that tell where things are in Mississippi already out there. I don't know that I've got the organizational skills to write a book, although I have talked about doing it in the past. Did you have another one
quickly? Unlimited Barred Owl Nest Box webcam earlier this year. Watch the little ones grow and leave. Will they start that up again?
Oh, yes.
And that's Ray and Gluckstadt.
Yeah. If WBU had one, they'll have that up again this year. Once they find a good location for a nest cam, they'll hold on to it. All right, guys. This is Ken Hackman, the Birdman, and I've enjoyed being with you. I thought you wanted me to finish before that tag. Ladies and gentlemen, the Garden Mama will be back next week right here on Weekend Gardening. I've enjoyed being with you. Good day.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from three licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.